Digital 410 Media proudly presents the What's the Scuttlebutt podcast with your hosts, Don Abernathy, Jeff Copsetta, and Dennis Blocker.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the What's the Scuttlebutt podcast, your favorite World War II-based podcast, and we're back live. We've got the whole crew together, plus one more joining us from Texas. As always, Mr. Jeff Copsetta. Jeff, how you doing tonight, sir?
Outstanding. I can't wait to introduce our guest. We've been trying to work on this for a few weeks now, so I think the listeners are in for a good treat tonight.
And if I ever get around to editing the video, joining us from the bright side of the moon, Mr. Dennis Blocker. Dennis, how are you doing tonight, sir?
Doing very well. It's good to be here. The rads are a little high on this end, but
oh, look, you made some Fallout references. Go ahead, Jeff. Take it away.
Joining us for this episode of What's the Scuttlebutt is become a real good buddy of ours and just an unbelievable historian. He's a current airman, service member, and we met, a year or two ago at an event. And, you know, like the people in this hobby, they just tend to stay in touch because we all have a common interest. And, you know, it's a pretty small cadre of people that do reenacting and try to keep World War II history alive. So I'm so happy that Mr. Gerald Caballero, otherwise known as Cowboy, is joining us tonight to talk his reenactment, some of his experiences, some of the things that he's collected, because he's everywhere and all over. He's reenacted in several states and several countries. So really, really excited to hear more about Cowboy tonight. Thanks for joining us, and welcome to What's the Scuttlebutt, buddy.
Thanks a lot for having me over. I'm really excited to be here. I really appreciate the opportunity to interact and be able to expand a little bit of my social media presence, and it's definitely a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking about social media, we're going to definitely talk about that before the end of the show with your new YouTube channel and everything that you've got going on and some of the new things that you've acquired. But first, if you could, when we first talked, I think we had a table display like right next to each other.
Yes, that's correct.
Down there at Stinson Army Airfield in San Antonio. And you were just showing me some amazing pictures of some of the reenacting you did overseas. And it was really intriguing. And if you don't mind sharing maybe how you got into the hobby and why you chose to reenact some of those things that you did, of course, not always on the American side, I guess I should say.
Yes, that's correct. All right, before I get started, I got a disclaimer that I got to go through. Like you said, I'm an active duty airman. So I'd like to clarify that at this time, basically everything that you hear from me to the end of this podcast is strictly my own personal opinion. It does not represent the policies, support, or sponsorship in any shape, way, or form for the United States government, the Department of Defense, or the Department of the Air Force. Also, like you said, I tend to be a reenactor that fulfill different countries. So strictly my interest in all this is a military historian perspective. It's not ideological, not racially biased or any kind of other negative, thought process associated with that. Strictly for the love of the hobby, if we're enjoying, different perspective from World War II. Well, that out of the way, I guess we'll go with how I got started on this. So I want to say I was probably about 8 years old, and my dad had resumed a relationship with his half-brother. They grew up apart. They have been separated through living in the same town, but in different households and not really having the opportunity to know each other. And then they kind of picked up their relationship in their 30s. So my uncle invited me over with my dad. And I remember entering to that living room for the first time in my life and then watching a picture of a gentleman in uniform sitting there in the middle of the living room. The picture for me was very moving, and I immediately got drawn up into the picture. And when I asked my father, like, who's the guy in the picture, he told me, well, that's your grandfather. And of course, honestly, at that point, I have not even internalized that I had a grandfather. Unfortunately, he died in 1967, so I didn't get to meet him or have any interaction with that side of the family. immediately after I heard those words, it's like my whole chest got pumped up, and I basically felt special, like, you know, like, wow. And why is he in uniform? What's he doing? Oh, he was in World War II. And I kind of took the liberty. I'm not really sure if you can see it with the lighting, but I decided to bring up the picture to kind of show you guys what I'm talking about. So this is Staff Sergeant Gerardo Caballero Lopez. A picture was taken in 1943. And at the time, he was stationed in the Panama Canal Zone, operating an anti-aircraft artillery unit or anti-aircraft artillery unit as a radio operator. Again, this all kind of research came down later in life when I became more of an adult and I started to get more interested in his service. Pretty much that kind of steered me in the direction of military service. Immediately, I joined the Civil Patrol and I started learning a little bit of what it was to kind of be an airman and getting involved with that type of program. I spent about 8 years. From then, I went to the Army ROTC and I did 2 years to learning how to be an infantry officer, which kind of solidified a little bit of that interest in World War II tactics and from the uniform perspective and everything that has to do with that. Later on, I ended up joining the Air Force. I became an Air Force pilot, went to pilot training in Del Rio, Texas, not very far away from here, where I'm stationed now. And my first assignment was basically the E-8 Joint Stars, which is an air-to-ground platform that was basically designed with the intent of explicitly supporting the Army role. So that kind of kept that relationship with, again, ground forces kind of alive. One day I walked up into my boss's office, and he was also a reenactor, and we had no idea, right? Because you tend to focus in your personal career, right? And these are all hobbies that a lot of times they don't come into play in your normal service life. And I picked it up real quick because he had a bunch of pictures that, you know, he had gone to Reading, Pennsylvania, and then basically done the bulge as a Army airborne, 506 Easy Company, you know, parachute infantry regiment guy. So he had some really amazing pictures with him in uniform. And immediately it captured my interest into, wow, that's something you can actually go do. And I had no idea that there's people that, you know, participate in this kind of hobby and this kind of engagement. And so it immediately intrigued my curiosity. So at the time he was reenacting with Group Star Florida. So he went ahead and basically gave me some contacts. I started interacting with different units.
What units were you, sorry to interrupt, but what units out of Florida were you working with?
Well, initially it was a 352nd Infantry Regiment, a very small outfit. One of the things interested, the German side is a lot smaller than the Allied side.
Yeah.
So there's some differences that I'll cover in a moment. But yeah, out of all the people that I sent emails to, I got replies back with like, oh, you got to meet all these requirements and we have all this like vetting process to join us. And then the German guy says, oh, you want to come over? Come over here. We're happy to have you. Again, a lot of it had to do with the perspective of how sometimes the negative aspect of this hobby from the German side doesn't carry it out to something that people want to be attached to or associated with. So I tried, I can't remember specifically what Allied units I actually interacted at the same time, but it quickly became apparent to me that coming in from somebody that has a little bit more military experience than they do, that it was very hierarchy orientated. And at the same time, some of the people that were running these outfits, their impression of how does a military unit kind of works is, in my opinion, wasn't really that accurate. And it kind of left me with a bit of a bad flavor from the get-go. At the same time, the Germans were extremely welcoming. And that's kind of how I ended up a little bit more into that particular unit. Seemed like everybody was interested in teaching me and showing me. Also, if you think about it from the perspective of how quickly you can train somebody into act like an American airman when it's the same culture, it's a lot easier to do than developing somebody from another country. There's a language barrier that you got to work through. There's a cultural development that you got to learn to portray, to try to make you as accurate as possible in your representation. That created some, I guess, barriers of entry that a lot of people are not necessarily willing to go through. And to, you know, when you actually show the interest, people are a lot more welcoming to you. So yeah, the first unit that I did was a Panzer Jäger unit, which is basically a tank hunter. You know, guys were eager to lend me uniforms, to lend me weapons, to lend me anything that, you know, that came in to allow you to like get interested and get a flavor for the hobby. And I think my first event was a tactical event in Ocala, Florida. And they brought in a couple of American tanks. And so the whole process of trying to, like, you know, gear up and sneak up to try to go take out a tank, I found it very interesting from the tactical perspective. And having a certain basic knowledge, you know, from my Army ROTC days on how to set up ambushes and how to do things like that, it made it really rewarding to be able to get involved with that. And so I quickly got some recognition, and it was interesting because they asked me, hey, we got this magnetic mine. We want you to run over to this tank and go attach it to. And the first thought that came to my mind was my commander getting notified that I got crushed by a tank from a simulated training event. So I'm like, I tell you what, I think I'm going to pass on that. I like where you guys are going to, but why don't you pick him instead of me?